In a minute, we're going to be starting in Lesson 3. I wanted to summarize Lesson 2, cover just a little bit at the end of that outline. Lesson 2 was talking about the point of Lesson 2. We were trying to get us to understand that the great battle that we face when we deal with emotional hurts or our mind is to make God's thoughts our thoughts. And it takes effort. It takes humility. We have to want to do it because it will not happen naturally. We've got to pursue it. And sometimes we talked about in the end of this lesson about if you've got repeating patterns of failure, if there's a lot of heartache, if there's a lot of problems popping up over and over, regardless if you have that, but particularly if you have that, it's always good to go back and say, you know, do I need to change something in my thinking? Is there some concept that I've taken even from youth, from my home, or from some other source? And let's never be afraid to have a tender heart and open our heart to God. And so we talked about the idea of pursuing God's will. We've talked about the big one, accept the thing you cannot change when you're hurt in your emotional situation. Understand what God has given you to do. Understand what you give to God. This is so huge. We've talked about it a lot, but it's very, very critical in overcoming, an overload and an emotional breakdown. And then as the last part, we talked about avoid patterns of failure. Again, things are happening over and over again. If you're beginning to see things that you don't like in your life, don't be a fool. A fool won't listen. But we've talked about being willing, again, to be taught. The pattern of failure involves you get angry, you blame others, you withdraw. And you end up bringing isolation, which brings a new wave of failures and disillusionment. And we talked about you don't have to go down that path. And then finally, last week, we talked about you need to know who to trust. Particularly in emotional times. In emotional times, you don't always see clearly. You sometimes you're afraid of people you ought to trust, and sometimes you tend to want to pull toward people they're not going to help you. Way before the time of crisis, know who you can trust. And even though telling the truth may be hurtful to you in the short term, those are the kind of people who'll help you see, because sometimes in emotional times, you can't see clearly. You really can't. And that's why we need that help. And we talked, last week we finished up with Saul in 1 Samuel 22, where he says, nobody feels sorry for me. My son is conspiring with David to kill me. And here he was in La La Land, completely just blind to his fantastic son Jonathan, his loyal servant David. He's rejecting them, trying to kill them, and he goes to Doeg, the Edomite. And we talked about the psalm in Psalm 52 about him, how deceitful he was, but that's who Saul chose to go to. And I say this, I give such emphasis, if I see Christians that fall away, I almost always see this pattern. They'll somehow push away from faithful brethren, and then they'll get with people in the world or other situations, and then they end up eventually falling away. So the thing, I'll finish with this, is be like the apostles in Matthew 26. When Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me, did they get up? It won't be me. In this case, now I realize earlier, he said, you'd forsake me and leave me. And they did go to fits. They may, but I won't. But here at the Lord's Supper, here, what did the apostles say when Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me?
Is it I?
Always be willing to do that. When you know you can go to God's Word, you got solid people around you. Is there something that I need to be changing here? Could I be doing something wrong? You don't ever want to get in that situation where you could admit no wrong, and you find yourself destroying relationships, isolating yourself. And I would remind you of Matthew 5:23-24, is that really, if you've got a problem with a brother or sister in Christ, fix it. Be people of reconciliation. Don't just let it stay out there for years and you're kind of angry about it. Do everything you can to fix any sin that has separated you from your brethren. You won't regret doing that. Running from it gives you bad things. And we'll be talking more about this. Again, we didn't cover this in the outline last week fully, but we're going to be coming back to this over and over again. That's one of the sad patterns of failure that I see. And you're seeing almost the common, you know, we're developing this concept more fully in this lesson. So lesson three, we're going to talk about do not flee from what is true. When we are in the wrong, what's our tendency? Let's say as a child, if you were in the wrong, what do we tend to do when we were children?
Blame it on somebody else.
Blame it on somebody else. Deny it, you know. I was pretty good at being more subtle. I was a subtle guy. So if I did something, you know, it wouldn't be as obvious that I did it. I always tried to hide in the shadows, you know. And, of course, I remember one time, I mean, this is bad. This is terrible. I wish I was hiding something. But I remember one time my brother came into the room, and I screamed bloody murder. Ah! And my mother came in there. What happened? He hit me, and he got a spanking. I did that. I was that bad. My brother got back at me and taught me that's not the way to do things. And so it is easy sometimes. Like I say, we can be masters of misdirection. And that's not a way to live life. Hopefully as we mature, as we develop in faith, we understand that it's never, ever, ever good for us to close our eyes to what is real. I'll give you an extreme illustration. Let's say somebody's really nervous about driving down the interstate. Things are going fast and there's a lot of traffic and they want to find peace. And so they decide what they're going to do is while the car's going down the road, they're going to crawl in the back seat and cuddle up in a little ball. They'll feel good. Well, they probably won't get to the back seat till they crash. But sometimes in life, you can go a little ways and you can cuddle up in your little ball. But what we'll find is that when you are choosing to create your own reality that is not real, Galatians 6:7 will apply. It's a hard and fast spiritual law that is true. And the Bible says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. One of the most powerful tools Satan has is deception. And if we can't see where we're at, there's no way to fix it. But I'll tell you one thing, you will get fruit. You will. And so, how do we find the strength to be honest? And I would say that's where our trust in God is so critical. One of the common things, when you see bad homes, dysfunctional homes, in some form or another, many have been raised in homes where truth at times is an enemy, where honesty is actually feared. And what happens when you get in dysfunctional homes, and there's various reasons why this happens, but you may have a situation where you maybe had a mother or a father or both that really didn't want you to be truthful with them. Maybe they were dealing with issues of depression or mental illness or something else. You see this typically in alcoholic homes. You see this in other homes where really truthfulness is punished. And what the person learns when they come out of such a home is that rather than tell the truth and somebody get hurt, pretend. And sometimes you learn to bury it. And those are the things that can create tremendous problems later in life. Now, I'll say this. Regardless of your home, regardless of your background, you can choose to overcome that pattern. You can choose to say, I trust God. He's a forgiving God. I really want to see. But I want to tell you, knowing your own background, this may be something you constantly have to fight toward. You may have that tendency to want to pretend, to create your unreal world. And that's where, again, faith comes in. I really do believe, in a broad way, even in secular matters, honesty is extremely difficult amongst people. I believe that deception is the preferred path. I believe that in order to truly be honest, almost in any field, that the strength to be honest and to see clearly is a spiritual issue. And that's why I had an old article years ago about one British writer that says, you know, we had this great catastrophe because people printed funny money and created all these financial instruments that were fake. And he says, you know, the only way that market's going to function, you have the best laws in the world, but you got to have morals. You got to have some spiritual foundation. If not, you know, you can choose to believe what you want to believe. Proverbs 1:5. Here we see this emphasis on spiritual commitment to truth. Proverbs 1:5, a wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will obtain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I've already stated this, but I want you to state it for me. Why does a belief in God cause us to be able to embrace reality? Why does having a fear of God and a knowledge of God cause us to want to see accurately? Something like that. Why is that so?
He's in control.
He's in control?
It's the beginning of understanding what reality comes from.
We don't really know reality without knowing God. It's true. What else? Let's go and lie. What if we get it wrong? We know God. What does God do with us? He forgives, doesn't he? He'll show us what's right. He'll give us comfort and help. We can get back on our feet. It's like, yeah. And ultimately, what's God's goal for us? What does God want for us, passionately want for us? He wants us to go to heaven and have an abundant life. So you can trust God. But when you trust God, just as you trust somebody who loves God, reality is going to be at the core. He's not going to let you go into your own fantasy world. You're going to find yourself pulled to seeing hard truths. Again, Proverbs 2. Here's the wisdom is personified as a person here. But it's the idea of, here's what, let's say, is this me? Is this me when I'm hurt? Is this me when there's controversy? Is this me in difficult times? Notice, Proverbs 2:2. See that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment, if you lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver, search for her for hidden treasures, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. Let me throw something at you. Can you tell, again, I realize we can't read hearts, and I realize you can get in emotional situations and we don't speak well, but as a rule, does it take you very long to know when you're talking with somebody who really wants to know what is true and is even willing to admit wrong versus one who's kind of, you know, in the fortress and not going to admit wrong? In other words, give me a characteristic of somebody. If let's say you're talking to them about something they've done wrong, and they have this quality, what might you hear from them? How might they express themselves to you?
This person wants to know truth, so they're asking questions.
Yeah. Let's say you're the one that wants to know, and I say, Yvette, you've done something wrong here, and here are some things I want you to think about. And let's say you're a person of integrity, want to seek truth. What are some ways you might respond? What are some statements you might make as you're talking with someone?
Like, ask questions so you know more, you understand more about what you've done or haven't done, or just to be listening would be important too.
To be listening, what else? It's the benefit.
What should I do to make this right?
Yeah, questions. Or have I done wrong? I really want to know. You'll see a reaction, I think, in people. I realize sometimes our emotions are high. Sometimes we're ready to get into the debate, and I realize we might not always be this way. But you really, you don't see that in a person. Let's look at it. Let's consider it. I'd like to know. And guess what? They will facilitate, even when there's hard words being directed at them. They'll facilitate communication because their commitment is to reality. Now, I may challenge all of us. All of us at times haven't been perfect in that, and sometimes we'll, I mean, we're going to talk about the misdirection that comes, but next time you're in a difficult situation and there's disagreement and there's a fight for what's right, make sure our heart is like this. We're not afraid wherever the truth may lead us. You'll find a blessing in that. And so, remember the tendencies. We've talked about this already. Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. Proverbs 16:2, all the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. So you see counsel, you see seeking, you see humility. You can live. You can live in an unreal world, and you can choose to do that, and no one can take you out of that. And that's checking is true for any of us. If any of us eventually fall away, that's what we're going to do. We'll eventually create an unreal world, and we think we can read the minds of other people, and we get into a situation where we're living in a la-la land, and we're very confident in it. And you see, that's the nature of Satan. Satan is described, as John 8, as a liar and the father of lies. You read about his work with the Gentiles in Ephesians 4:17. Notice how the mind can be lost. He says, this I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walked, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all cleanness with greediness. One more time, protect your heart. This can happen to any of us, where we get emotional and we start getting defensive and we start lowering our head, and we're determined that the truth is not what the truth is, but as the old song, I think it's in one of the operas, the Phantom of the Opera, the truth is what it ought to be. Oh, we got to want to know the truth, what it is, not what we want it to be. And so let's talk about two areas where we can go down this path, two battlefields that cause the mind to shut down. Let's first talk about fear. Fear. If I had a number one enemy in my life, you know, each of you will have different areas. Mine is fear. My personality type, even though you don't see it, I'm a fearful type. That's the thing I have to battle. Is fear wrong? No. It's God-given emotion. It's a needed emotion. Well, I've joked sometimes that Emily and Yvette and I have talked about it, raising some wonderful children. Sometimes as a young, outgoing child, that we worried that our child had no fear, and that was a very big concern as a parent. Fear is a feeling of agitation and anxiety caused by the presence or imminence of danger. Fear is okay. It has a proper place when it's guided by God's knowledge. Let me show you some occasions. Let's talk, put yourself in Paul's shoes in Acts 18. Did you know Paul occasionally had somebody disagree with him and say hurtful words to him, didn't he? They did a whole lot more than that. There were times where he thought he was dead. And there was one time he really, really thought he was dead because they stoned him. Here was a failed execution and he lived through it. There was one occasion where there was a group of Jews that swore they weren't eating drink again until they killed him. And when the Romans found out about it, they took a large number of soldiers and got him out in the middle of the night. And they took it seriously. Now, let's say you're Paul and you're in a new place and there's Jews there and there's mad people there. Would you be afraid? I was reading yesterday on Facebook where a brother was in somewhere, maybe in northern Africa, where there's a large Muslim contention. And he says the UN security forces came in and talked to him yesterday and says there's going to be some protests. There's going to be potential violence, and you need today to keep yourself out of the public because you would be in danger. And he says, well,
I've got several churches I'm going to go to preach today. Pray for me. I'm going to go preach. That would be a frightening thing.
Now, what did you do with fear? Notice what happened with Paul in Acts 18:9. Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision. Do not be afraid, but speak and do not keep silence, for I am with you. And no one will attack you to hurt you, for I have many people in this city. As a Christian, the one thing that I really, really, really want to know is this. What is God's will? What is God's will? Whatever controversy you get into, whatever difficulty you get into, if you can know the answer, this is God's will. And I want to tell you, don't fear. Don't fear. We're in an age where teachers, preachers, others, you get all kinds of reactions. And you want to be careful. You want to follow God's will in a tender heart and careful attitudes. But above all, you want to do right. And not be afraid. As a Christian, with a deal with our jobs, I don't know the situations you and I may face. But notice again, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. And who is he who will harm you? I love this question. Here's a rhetorical question. Who is he who will harm you if you become followers of what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. And do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. If you want to overcome fear, let me talk about this as a Christian. And we have the wrong kind of fear. How do you overcome the wrong kind of fear? Let's say I'm afraid that people are going to react badly, so I'm going to withdraw. I am afraid that, today I may die, How do you react to fear? I'm afraid what others may think. Maybe I'm starting to think I know what others think. How do you overcome the bad kind of fear?
You properly place fear where it should be.
Yes.
Everything you just said was horizontally fear, whereas our fear should be vertically placed.
We see God. Know His will. We pray to Him. Ungodly fear is overcome by truth. That the fear that is not good, the answer to it is light and knowledge. If you can put light on it, you will see that a lot of things you fear are mirages. Well, even if they're true, God will be with you and God will work it for good. And so, one of Satan's greatest tools is fear. I think fear is so powerful. I would probably say it's the number one tool. I may rethink this, but right now in the course in my mind, I'm thinking certainly it's one of his major tools. Fear is so effective. Notice, for instance, in Hebrews 2:14. Why did Jesus come to this world? It says, inasmuch as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, He, speaking of Jesus, He Himself likewise shared in the same, that through death He might destroy him, that's Satan, who had the power of death, that is the devil. Now notice this, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. I'm going to skip around here a little bit, and I want to look at some common fears. And you list some fears. How does Satan use fear in our lives? What are some things that you have feared that once you thought through, you're going, I shouldn't be fearing this? What are some common struggles you might have in the areas or just in general about fear? Where will fear be a temptation to you and I? What are some categories?
Stand up for what's right. I'm going to face persecution.
Okay. Persecution, stand up for what's right.
Might happen in the future.
What's that?
Fear of the future.
Fear of the future. Yeah. Uncertainty. Have financial uncertainty. Uncertainty with other people. What else? No,
about fear of what others are thinking. They're similar, but that's a common one. It's much more common than you realize. You know, sometimes, can I use an illustration? I know our mothers can appreciate this. Sometimes when your child may misbehave, you know, the mother takes it very personal. And you're trying to train your children, you want your children to do the best, and there's tremendous burdens. You know, what are others thinking? You know, they're thinking me of a bad parent. I know that may sound silly, but it's a very common struggle. You do your best with your child, and I think you do the absolute best with your child, and your child's going to grow up, but there's periods of immaturity, but sometimes you can take it on yourself and be very afraid what others are doing or what's going to happen to my child. You know,
there's a lot of interesting fears. Here's a big one, and I'm going to be talking to our college students about this. By the way, I'm thinking about preaching on fear tonight, so y'all might get a double dose of this.
But you know, one of the things with our college students is sometimes they're afraid of taking the next step in their life. And one of them is dating. Going from a situation where you're a kid and you do things, you've got your life, and then going to the dating phase, which could lead to the marriage phase. I think I really see a lot of fear with our college students in that area. I think they sometimes neglect opportunities. Fear can be in a lot of areas where you can stay with the familiar and you don't go to the next step in your life that you need to go to. So there are a lot of areas where fear can hold us back. Like I say, the fear of what others think of us. How about the fear of facing your own sin? And that's a big one. We'll be talking about that in just a second. Let me show you how Satan uses fear. First off, Jesus commonly, and this was a case of where a child had died and he was going to raise the child from the dead, of course, and I would understand that fear. But Jesus says, do not be afraid, only believe. John 14:27, peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, though I give to you. Let your heart not be troubled, neither let it be afraid. But you see, Satan uses fear very effectively. In John 12:42, it says, nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. 12 spies. Taking of the promised land. How many spies said you could take the promised land?
Two.
How many said they couldn't? And how quickly did Israel believe the 10 spies?
Very
quickly. Fear is easily shared. Remember that in political season, too. Matter of fact, we like somebody, the world's going in. But listen, don't get caught so caught up in politics, but politicians love. They love to stir up anger and fear. You know why? Anger and fear are easily shared. You can get somebody in the angry mode, get somebody in the fearful mode so quickly. And you don't examine any facts. You just know it's true. And so, it's like how many people have been killed in stampedes in a crowded, you know, place? Fire! You know, nobody looked to see there's fire. Everybody's running. And so it can easily get caught up in fear. That's true of a congregation. It's true of a family. It's true of a business. It's true of a nation.
Okay. Let's talk about sin. You know, as you have a good conscience and you know your sin, and hopefully you have repented of sin,
you're not going to walk in sin. But if you choose to walk in sin, can you hide that from others? You can't. From your brethren and others, you can.
For a little while.
And you could till death. There is an interesting passage where it says some sins, you know, become known. Some will follow you to the judgment. You don't want them to follow you to the judgment. You'd rather have them known. But you know what happens when we still have a conscience? I know this from a preacher standpoint. This happens a lot. Sometimes I'll preach a lesson. Sometimes I'll be in a meeting. And somebody is angry with me. And you know why they're angry with me? Because they just thought I knew exactly what they had been doing. I didn't know their name. It's interesting.
The defense mechanism here. I love Proverbs 28:1. The wicked flee when no one pursues. But the righteous are as bold as a lion. And I've had that happen to me where I'm struggling with something and somebody teaches something and, oh, they know my weakness, you know. And that's all that, it's good to have. I think it's good to have that fear and that discomfort. Why? Well, you just get straight. It not have anything to fear. There's something about a good conscience that's powerful. But it's interesting, why do people not deal with their sin? How could fear cause people not to deal with sin?
It requires change.
And sometimes you're convinced you can't. But you can't. God says you can't, you can, but you're right, it's good. What else? Why does people allow fear to keep them from dealing with sin?
Avoidance is easier.
It's short term. It's technically not easier. If you seek wisdom, you'll know it's not easier. But if you forsake wisdom, you know, I'd rather keep coasting. What else?
I think we fear mainly what other people think, which is just the opposite. It's the greatest deception of the devil, because when we see somebody go forward, I bet everybody in this room, their heart goes out to them, whereas they probably think that we're going to take that. It's just the opposite.
Yeah, And it's interesting, one of the real struggles, it's interesting, as you look at the man in 1 Corinthians 5 that was written up by Paul, you know, the one who had his father's wife. Did you know he repented? But in 2 Corinthians 2, I don't have this in the outline, do you know what he needed? He needed reassurance lest that guilt overwhelm him. It is amazing how our mind works. How we think we know what everybody else is thinking. And Satan can take advantage of that. And fear is a big area. Sometimes those who are in leadership positions, they could be afraid to ever admit they're wrong. Or ever admit they've done wrong. And that's, you know, how many of you got through that? If people know my weakness, they will forsake me and hate me and throw me away. You know, have you gone through that? Have you ever? I've had some of the most interesting nights of tossing and turning, not even when I've done wrong. In one case, I was fearful that somebody was lying about me and saying something about me. And it was amazing the torment that brought. And it was, none of it was true. None of it was true. But it's fascinating.
One passage that has helped me at times too, and it's in 1 Corinthians 13, and I know in it Paul is talking about the completion of God's revealed will, but he said in verse 11, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. And even though I'm a grown man, these fearful things can come up and make questions in your mind, and I have to get back to
And you know, one of the worst things that could happen to us while we're struggling with this is for us to be isolated. And sometimes we get sick or something else happens and we can't be around people. The more you're isolated and you're not interacting with others, the much greater temptation that fear can take you to a reality that is an ugly reality. It's one that you really don't want to live in.
Quickly, before I lose this thought, on your definition of fear, and when you say choose reality over fear, it says it's the presence or imminence of danger. And the difference there is much the way that roller coasters are built, as an analogy. They are built to invoke fear, but you wouldn't get on one if there was danger involved. You only get on a roller coaster to experience the sensation of fear because of the perceived imminence of danger, not because it's actually dangerous. And some people will not get on a roller coaster because the imminence is so great that they can't handle the imminence of danger. When we look at life that way, once we understand that the reality of the matter is that God is in control there really is no danger involved, but rather a sensation of danger or a perception of danger, then we possibly can board this roller coaster with the understanding that we will come out okay at the end.
And that's trust. We talk about reality, we're speaking of trust. Is that the first? Second. Okay. All right, I'm going to leave you with one statement. We'll develop it next week. It's so crucial. Fear is creative. It will often bring you the very thing you fear. And this is a major point we'll develop next week on this. Now, if you don't fight fear, it's fascinating how it works in your life. We'll talk about that next week. And
thank you for your participation.